This podcast is part of the Zio to Hero Podcast Network.
AvenuePodcast.net.
Hello, all my beautiful people. It's time for another fun episode of If You Give a Dad a Podcast, and I just want to say thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. Whether this be the first time that you've tuned in, or if you're a longtime listener, I'm glad that you're here to listen to this episode with me today. I'm actually really excited about this. It's one that I've been looking forward to since I met the guy in January. I actually met him at the Northwest Arkansas Comic Con. He was one of the guests there. And the guy that I'm talking about is Townsend Coleman. He is a voice actor from my childhood, from a lot of you guys' childhood, actually. He was the voice of Michelangelo from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He was part of Inspector Gadget. He was on Fraggle Rock, so he was on all kinds of stuff. There was another big thing in my childhood called Adventures in Odyssey. It was an audio drama, and he plays the voice of Jason Whitaker on there. So I'm really excited to have him on today and for you guys to hear this episode. And for those of you who are here just to listen to the Townsend Coleman episode, welcome. I hope that you enjoy what you hear, and I hope that you stick around and listen to some of the other great episodes that I have here as well. So, if you guys are as excited as I am, then let's get this show on the road.
If You Give a Dad a Podcast.
You're bloody welcome!
You know.
Hey, Dad.
If I get my hand stuck in a pickle jar, I'm straight up bull in a china shop, just swinging around.
Started writing songs when I was about 12 or so.
Seriously?
They're retrofitting me now.
And I'm like, yes, finally.
I also had the opportunity to go train with Royce Gracie and Dan Severin.
Wow.
I like that. That's different. Stands out.
That day I took my very first bump and it was fun.
There's only one section to go through first. Yeah. The toys.
Bro.
I was like, no, man. Surely this guy's not booked out that long.
I haven't laughed that hard since I was a little girl.
What?
Man, this guy will shut up.
And just a reminder before we get started here, make sure that you like, share, and subscribe to iGadap wherever it is you're listening to. Hit that notification bell so you are notified when a new episode drops. Also, make sure that you go out there and rate and review this episode. Tell me what you think of it. And the more people that do that, the more likely I am to be recommended to somebody else. Now, on to the show. All right, everybody. This one is going to be a lot of fun today. I'm actually really excited about this. I am talking to a man that pretty much grew up listening to. He played Michelangelo in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He played the Tick. He's done all kinds of other things. But one thing that I'm most excited about, as you know, I've had Phil Lawler on the show here before. And now I have on with me Townsend Coleman, and he played the voice of Jason Whitaker in Adventures in Odyssey, and this is just going to be a real treat. Townsend, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man, and don't say played in the past tense, because I'm still playing him.
You are, yeah. Yes. Okay, yeah. Yeah,
we're
yeah.
still doing Adventures in Odyssey after all these years. I've been going for 30 years on it, but the show itself has been around for, what, 35, 36 years, something like that.
Something like that. I mean, y'all are about to have your 1,000th episode. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're looking forward to it. We got a big shindig, a big wingding in Colorado Springs coming up in August.
Right on.
First weekend. Yeah, first weekend of August.
I think I told you this whenever I met you. I still have the CD of the 500th episode.
Kidding. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I got it at one of the local Christian bookstores or something whenever it came out, because man, I it's funny, I actually have like a stack that my mom gave me recently of some of my old CDs and cassette tapes, because I used to listen to it. Like, that's what I went to bed listening to at night, was Adventures in Odyssey.
Right Gosh, we hear those stories all the time.
Yeah It's so we'll kind of jump into everything here, you know. And
sure.
So was this something that you wanted to do growing up, or when did you find out that this was something that you wanted to do?
Well, you're not specifically doing, you know, cartoon voices and radio dramas and such. Although I always wanted to be an actor. I knew that much ever since I was in fourth grade. Yeah. And we went and as a class project went and saw a local production of Peter Pan that the older brother of a classmate of mine was in playing Michael. But it was a great production because they were actually flying the kids and the people and stuff. I mean, it was fantastic. And, you know, my little fourth grade mind didn't know the difference between that show and Broadway. So I just, you know, figured this is Hollywood. And so I saw that and I knew my buddy Greg's brother was playing Michael in that. And I thought, that's what I want to do. That's crazy. That's exactly what I want to do. And yeah, and so I started pursuing it, you know, when I was in elementary school and then middle school and then high school. And yeah, so, you know, acting, the acting thing is the acting bug bit me early and has kind of always been on the radar for me, but which is why I moved from Cleveland, Ohio, which is where I grew up, to LA in 1984. So it'll be 40 years coming up this Labor Day. Wow, crazy. But it's why because I had gotten into radio in Cleveland. So I was a rock jock there. I was a radio DJ for 10 years at a bunch of different stations in the Cleveland market. And finally, after 10 years, and that's where I discovered voiceover, freelance voiceover.
Yeah.
Because I was doing commercials. I was voicing commercials for the radio stations that I worked for. A couple of them I was a production director at. And so that was just part of my job. But I started getting calls from local ad agencies asking if I could voice some of their clients' radio and TV spots. And I said, sure. So I went and discovered what that was all about. And they were paying me apart from the radio station. I had nothing to do with the radio stations I was at. And I joined the union back then, 50 years ago. It was in 1973 that I joined AFTRA. And so that's where I started doing voiceover. And after about 5 years of doing that, I was making more money a year doing the freelance voiceover stuff than I was working 6 days a week at the radio station. And so, you know, it was a fairly easy decision for me to make to pursue voiceover instead of being a DJ.
Right.
So that's how that started. That was all in Cleveland. Where that happened. And so in 1984, I had just turned 30 in May of 84. And in June, quit the radio station. And just a couple of weeks after that, I got a phone call from our landlord saying that he was selling the house that we were renting. And we had to be out by the end of September of 84. Well, I had three kids at the time. And I knew that I had to get them settled in school someplace if I was actually going to move. So I came out here to LA during the summer, right after the Olympics of 84, and just tootled around and found a little place to rent over in Glendale and went home. We packed up the house. I sold a car. Literally 2 weeks later, we were living here, pulled in over Labor Day weekend.
Wow.
So that was kind of my quick journey from Cleveland to LA. And then I had a friend out here who she and her husband were very gracious and helped me get interviews at each of their agents, commercial agents. And so I ended up signing with one of those agencies 2 weeks after I got here. And then things just kind of took off for me. I knew I could do some voiceover work because I had done so much of it back in Cleveland.
Right.
But that wasn't why I moved here. I moved here because I wanted to be an on-camera actor in, you know, movies and TV shows and such.
Yeah.
But I signed with this commercial agency and I started getting some voiceover gigs fairly straight away and then started doing a lot of on-camera commercials as well. So that was kind of keeping me afloat while I was trying to get my theatrical career off the ground, my on-camera acting career.
Right.
And so that's the way it was. And 6 months after I got here, I got an audition for a cartoon called Inspector Gadget.
Yeah.
And I was familiar with the show And this was in the spring of 85. But and I was familiar with the show because my kids watched it when we were still living in Cleveland. Yeah. And so I went on this audition and I ended up getting a part on this series. It was only for the last 10 episodes of the series. And the character's name was Corporal Cape Man. He was a Gadget's assistant.
Okay.
And I had so much fun doing that part that I asked my agents to please send me out on, you know, more animation auditions because it was such a blast. And they did. And I started booking stuff. And so, I mean, you know, in fairly short order, I was booking shows and realized that, you know, I sort of had a bit of an affinity for this this line of work.
Yeah.
And loved it. And so, you know, I kept going out on those. And in the meantime, my on-camera theatrical career just wasn't happening. I mean, I was beating my head against a wall trying to, you know, I mean, I got a couple of small parts in a couple of movies and TV shows. But when I say small, I mean like minuscule. But what I discovered, though, in doing that was that I didn't really like that end of the business. The whole reason I moved out here was to do that and then discover that I'm not that crazy about it, you know. So I, after 2 years of pursuing it, I just dropped it altogether and just concentrated on the on-camera TV commercials. Yeah. And the voiceover stuff. And I, you know, I was booking some pretty big accounts, commercial accounts, voiceover wise. And I started booking more animation, more cartoon series. And it's kind of one thing led to another. And that, you know, the voiceover thing just ended up becoming my career. So I just kind of never looked back. And here I is.
know? Well, yeah. I mean, I'm glad that it turned out that way, because, I mean, you voiced some of my favorite people over the years, you know. But I did want to ask you one thing. How did your kids react when they found out that you were going to be playing the voice of a character on one of their cartoons that they watch?
Well, I think I think that they thought it was pretty cool. You know, they were still young back then. I mean, so in 85, my oldest would have been 10.
Okay.
And yeah, and my oldest son was 7.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I had a baby girl, and I did not yet have our fourth child, which is my youngest son. So, Okay. Yeah. So I think they thought it was cool. I don't think they knew what to make of it. You
right.
know, it's like when I go to cons and stuff and meet families and I talk to little kids and, you know, and even like 8 or 9 year olds, I can always see in their faces that they're looking at me like, wait a minute. So what do you do?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
who are you? I mean, yeah. I see those pictures up there on your banner that there's a picture of Michelangelo and the Tick and, you know, Corporal Cape Man and Waldo and these guys. But
right.
But wait, so you're their voices, but you don't, you know, but I can see in their faces, they're like, but you don't look like them. Like they're expecting,
right.
like they're expecting
the
voice after. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think my kids were kind of sort of the same way. I you know, it's, they didn't really quite know what to make of it,
yeah.
but at the same time though, they also knew that I was a DJ and, you know, they grew up, you know, only knowing dad's job as being on the radio and
gotcha.
Doing voiceover stuff and doing commercials. So I think maybe they put it together more than most kids might.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still cool. You know, I mean, with the reason why I asked that is because now, since I've been doing this podcast, my son actually goes around telling people that I'm famous because of all the different people that I talk to on the show.
Right.
And
right,
stuff.
Right.
And so it's funny to see, you know, a kid's reaction whenever, you know, they get that in their head. Oh, well, my dad's a big deal, you know, or something. And, you know, I imagine that it was there was a point, there's aha similar for your kids as well.
Yeah. I think there was. I think that maybe sometimes it was a little cooler for them when they actually saw me on TV.
Yeah.
You know, either in one of the little bit parts that I played. Or in commercials, you know, right. They'd see a commercial and say, oh, there's Dad, you know, so that I think they equated with being, I don't know if they thought it was famous, but being, right. Now I get what he does. Cause yeah. I see him there and I recognize him, you know?
Yeah.
I do remember, when I was really starting to get busy, within just a year or two of having moved here, that my youngest daughter, she was 15 months when we moved here. So say 2 years later, you know, when she's 3 and a half, mm-hmm. 4 years old, around in there, you know, I remember reading her. I used to read Dr. Seuss books to my kids.
Yeah.
At night. And so I you know, I'd read her Dr. Seuss books. And I remember at one point, you know, I would do these silly voices for him. And I remember her looking at me going, Daddy, talk normal. It's like it made her nervous that I was, you know, talking in these sort of weird, wacky voices. Because even though she looked at me and she knew it was me because she recognized me, mm-hmm. she didn't recognize the voice.
Right.
And she couldn't put that together. And that made her nervous. It scared her. And so she didn't like it when I did the character voices early on. But, you know, but then as she got a little older and she'd see me on TV or see the cartoons, then she started to put it together.
Right.
Yeah, I actually had a situation about a week and a half ago where I was babysitting my youngest granddaughter. So she's two,
right? Okay.
And so she just turned two, and I was over watching her. Her name is Remy. So when I go over to babysit, I call it Remy sitting. So I was Remy sitting one day, and I went over there. And I started doing some silly voices with her, and she did exactly the same thing. She looked at me. Now my grandkids, they call me Grandpa T. And so she calls me Grandpa T. And but when I was doing some silly little, you know, noises and voices and stuff, she looked at me and she came right up to my face, looked me in the eye, and then started waving at me and saying, Grandpa T, Grandpa T. And I recognized it was exactly the thing that used to affect my youngest daughter when she was around the same age, all those years ago. So,
wow.
Yeah. Little kids, you know, they have sometimes a hard time trying to make sense of,
they do.
What they see on TV, you know, because on TV, it's one thing.
Right. But
then when they, you know, hear the voice from coming out of a real person, but that doesn't look like that on TV,
right.
Now all of a sudden they're scratching their head.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you find it easy to find the different voices that you've done? Was it something that you just developed as you were going along, or were these like voices that you already had and you was like, oh, this will go great for this character?
No. I'm not any sort of prolific voice creator, character voice creator, you know. I leave that to the guys who are truly talented at that. You know, the Rob Paulsons and Jim Cummings and Maurice LaMarches of the world, you know, Jess Harnell and these guys. You know, these guys are they're comedians and they're impressionists, and mm-hmm. they, you know, they're creative vibe goes deep in them. My creative vibe is a little, I think, a little different. So for me, because when I came out here, I never gave any thought to doing cartoons.
Right.
It just wasn't on my radar. Now, when I was on the radio at a couple of stations, I did some character, you know, stuff when I was doing a morning show. And that was one thing, and I sort of created some characters back then. Don't remember much of them, but I don't think there were anything really to write home about. So when my agent sent me on that audition for Inspector Gadget, and I got that part of Corporal Cape Man, what happened was, because I'd never auditioned for a cartoon before, I didn't really know what I was doing. So when I showed up, a gal named Marcia Goodman, she was the voice director of the show and also the casting director. So she brought me in to her office, and it was just a regular, office, you know,
right.
It wasn't a studio or anything like that. She had literally a Radio Shack cassette deck, just sitting on her desk with a Radio Shack mic plugged into it. And that was it. And
wow.
When I showed up, she, you know, gave me my script. And the way these auditions work is they give you a script that's not the script of a show. It's actually just a page of sample lines that character will say. Okay.
Oh.
And then along with that, on a separate page was a picture of the character, mm-hmm. and then a description of the character's personality, maybe a little about his background, that sort of thing.
Right.
So you've got these three elements, basically. You've got a picture of the character, you've got a description of the character, and then you've got the character's lines, his sample lines. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so when she handed me these things, I looked at them and I thought, I think I was able to figure it out pretty quickly that, oh, okay, this is what the character looks like. And
right.
you know, this is what he's about. And this is what he says. So as I read through that, that info, you know, I took about 5 minutes or so. And she said, just let me know when you're ready. And I said, great. But what I discovered was when I looked at the picture of the character, that mm-hmm. to me in that moment told me everything I felt like I needed to know about what the character sounded like. So for me, it's a very visual cue that I get from looking at, from trying to figure out what a character sounds like, really is based on what he looks like. Now, I've learned over the years that that's not necessarily always true. You know, there are characters that will sound nothing like what they look like.
Right.
You know, because the actor perhaps brought something different to it. Maybe it was based on an impression they do, or maybe it was based on just going completely opposite of type. So if you look at this character, say, and I'm just bringing up a generic one, say he's a big, you know, 300-pound roly-poly guy, you know, with sort of a fat neck and a little head.
Yeah.
You know, and these little stubby legs and these little stubby arms and stuff, you know, and maybe he's got a bunch of beard. And you might look at this character and go, oh, I know what he sounds like because he's a big, you know, fat, dumb guy. You know, he's probably going to sound like this, you know, real stereotypical.
Yeah.
When in fact, you know, maybe the actor, the creative actor who got the part ends up coming up with a voice that sounds like this.
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't sound at all like what the character looks like. You know, so
yes.
So that's going against type.
Right.
You know, which I sort of learned as I went along. But I always start with, you know, based on what the character looks like, here's what I think he might sound like.
Right.
And so when I looked at the picture of Corporal Capeman, I came up with a voice that immediately hit me. It was sort of a kind of an old Ed Wynn version of a character. And Marsha, she laughed when I did it, and that's always a good sign, you know. So
yeah.
So she said, "That's great." Now, because he had these big buck teeth, the character, not Marsha. I gave him a good bit of a lisp.
Okay.
And she liked what I was doing, but she wanted me to take the lisp out of it. So,
gotcha.
So I did. So I backed off on that, and we played with it for about 5 or 10 minutes, and that was that. And she sent me on my way. And a couple of days later, I got a call from my agent saying, "You booked that Inspector Gadget character." And I'm like, "Whoa, you're kidding. Really crazy." So I showed up in a little studio in Burbank a couple of days after that, and there were just four of us in the studio. It was Maurice LaMarche, Frank Welker, me, and Don Adams.
Wow.
And I was like looking at these guys. Now, I recognized Don Adams, of course, because I was a big Get Smart fan when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And But I had no idea who Maurice LaMarche was, and I had no idea who Frank Welker was. Uh-huh. You know, well, come to find out very quickly, you know, who these guys were. Now, interestingly, it was Maurice's, it was Mo's first cartoon series also. Hmm. He had not long before that come down from Toronto, where he's from. And you know, Mo is a comedian, as well as a very gifted voice actor and actor. And so, you know, he fell into the cartoon world too, and
right.
He knew who Frank was, but I didn't at the time. Now, crazily enough for me, when I was still living in Cleveland, shortly before I moved out here, my kids watched that show. I would hear it on in the background, and I would hear this character, Dr. Claw.
Yeah.
And I could not for the life of me imagine who the actor or what the actor who did yeah. that voice might look like,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it was just enormous.
Yes.
And so when I showed up at that first session, one of the things I was really curious about was meeting whoever this actor was. Well, I showed up and I looked at Mo and I realized it couldn't be him. I looked at Frank, couldn't be him. I knew it wasn't Don Adams. So I figured the actor wasn't there.
Yeah.
And maybe they just recorded him separately.
Right.
And so we're reading through the script, I'm reading through the script, highlighting my lines, and I see that there are some Dr. Claw lines in this script. So I figure, well, when we get to those lines, we'll just skip over them, and they'll get the actor, bring him in separately to do his lines.
Yeah.
So we start the first pass. We start recording our take one,
uh-huh.
and we get to that page with the Dr. Claw lines on it, and we're just about to what I think is skip over the line when all of a sudden Frank, who's sitting literally 18 inches away from me on my left,
yeah,
he opens his mouth and out drops his voice of Dr. Claw.
Oh wow.
And I just could not believe what I was hearing, and I looked at him and I gasped, I mean out loud, forgetting that we were recording, and I said, "Oh my God, it's you!" And he, you know, he was very, very funny, very gracious, and he smiled and he said, "Yes, it's me." He could see that I was just stunned
yeah.
by that.
Yeah.
But Frank's got a very sort of light, easygoing, you know, natural voice.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit higher, and so you kind of wouldn't think that voice could that person could also embody the voice of not only Dr. Claw, but a billion other, you know, monsters and
yes.
evildoers and such. So, yeah. you know, as well as, you know, Scooby-Doo and Fred and, you know,
wow.
Everything else that Frank has done. I remember yeah. the first time I saw Frank's, after I got to know him a little, and working with him, I remember the first time I saw his name in credits in a feature, and I was in the movie theater seeing Star Trek,
uh-huh.
and I don't remember whether it was one or two. It was one of the Star Trek films.
Okay.
And the credits roll at the end, and I see Frank Welker's name in the credits at the end, and he was credited for doing Spock's screams.
Oh.
And that was it.
Wow.
Spock screams, yeah. So huh. I think it was the one where Spock dies in one of those movies. I don't remember. It was a million years ago. Anyway, or was in great pain. But anyway, that was Frank screaming for Leonard Nimoy.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's the kind of stuff Frank does. He, you know, he specializes in monsters and,
right.
and creatures and all kinds of stuff, but also in crazy, you know, vocal sound effects and animals. Like mm-hmm. on Inspector Gadget, he was Mad Cat and Brain the Dog as well. As well as, you know.
He did a little bit of all of it.
Yo, he was everywhere. He was he was all over that show, just yeah. as he is in any show that they use him for.
Right.
He's a million guys
yeah.
in all
yeah.
these. I mean, I have long said, you know, this town could do with about, you know, 300 less of us, fewer of us. And just use Frank.
Well, yeah. one thing that I love to watch, is on TikTok when you have these different voice actors and they just go through and do the different voices that they've done over the years. And some of them, they just blow me away because I'm like, I did not realize that that's who did that voice. And he was one of them for me, you know. And so that's really cool to hear. I didn't know that he did the voice of the Claw. So, yeah, that's really cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got guys, you know, who are like Frank, you know, like Jim Cummings, for instance, or Rob Paulsen or Jess Harnell or Maurice LaMarche. You know, these guys that do Billy West, that do all these voices that you might not realize until you see a TikTok video like that, or you look at their banner and it's got, you know, or you go to their IMDb page and you scroll through, you know, 9 pages of credits. it's unbelievable, you know, what some of those guys are capable of. It's crazy to me.
Yeah. So how often do they have you guys like recording in the same room? That way you can kind of like play off of each other and what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, prior to the pandemic, all the time.
Okay.
That's the way they always do it. And they always prefer to do it is have you in the studio. They call it recording ensemble. You're all together.
Yeah. And so, I guess it makes it more natural that way.
Well, not only more natural, but more more energetic. There's just more of way more of a sense of being able to play off of each other and bounce off each other.
Right.
And so, that's why they like having everyone in the studio together. The energy is just way different.
Yeah.
You know, and especially when you get some of these, you know, high octane, you know, uber creative guys.
Yes.
And when I say guys, I don't mean just men, but you know, men and women
in the
studio together. It's a gab fest, and I'll tell you, it is hard to keep up, which is why I generally don't even bother trying. You know, I am a very appreciative audience in sessions like that.
That's cool.
But I will say that when the pandemic hit, and of course they couldn't do that anymore, they had to figure out a way of being able to record, you know, remotely. People primarily from their homes, so everybody was, you know, wiring themselves up for sound at home and using help me out Townsend,
like
don't act like an old man, using
Zoom and stuff.
Systems like like Zoom but not right. Zoom but it would be audio based, so like IPDTL or source
code.
The beauty of IPDTL is that you can get 6 actors on the session simultaneously, all remotely from different locations.
Oh, wow.
And they can all hear each other and bounce off each other, kind of like you would in a studio.
Okay.
Whereas the other systems, you really can't do that. Not that easily. So anyway, but with the pandemic, that's how things started going. And I think in many cases, a lot of people still record that way. Either the talent prefers it that way, or the producers prefer it that way because they can save on studio costs. You know, there are all kinds of considerations, but I will say this, but that's the way it is for TV animation,
right?
For feature animation, where they use primarily celebrities. Those sessions are done. They bring the celebs in, you know, they schedule them each, and the celebs typically come in by themselves and record their lines wild.
Gotcha.
Just by themselves.
Gotcha.
So,
okay. So yeah, you were talking about the, during the pandemic and stuff. And I've had a few voice actors on here and stuff that do a lot of like, anime and stuff, or like Funimation, and you know, I know that with them, like, they send microphones to their houses and stuff like that, and they have like whole studios set up in their house now, and you know, they still prefer to do it that way. It's pretty interesting, you know, just hearing the different ways that people have been able to still do this, even, you know, while the pandemic was going on, and then going back and it not being exactly the same as it was, you know, prior to it. But I mean, there's a lot that's changed to that way.
Yeah, no fooling. I mean, the pandemic obviously changed so many things in so many ways.
Yeah.
And our business is, you know, just one of them.
Right.
You know, it's like a lot of people are having a hard time going back into the office after for the last 3 or 4 years they've gotten used to working from home.
Yeah.
And digging it and finding out that it works.
Exactly.
It's okay.
Yep.
You know, it they can actually not get away with it. Can actually be just as productive at home as they are in an office. And they don't have to worry about traffic. They don't have to worry about parking, you know, all that stuff. So, the pandemic has brought about so many changes. But in our business, man, let me tell you, pretty much everybody in town, and I'm not talking about just animation people, but people who are doing any sort of voiceover work.
Yeah.
Every voice actor in town was scrambling, and not just in town, but I mean all over the country, was scrambling to either put in a home studio or, you know, beef their existing home studio up so, you know, that it was clean and quiet and, you know, real strong internet and such. So, yeah, but the pandemic changed all of that. I had actually been working at home before the pandemic for quite a while because I had something called ISDN, which was a way of connecting studios to connecting me to studios or networks.
Yeah.
And because at the time I was a third rail. I never thought of it like that. A third leg of my three-legged stool of my career.
Uh-huh.
So I did a lot of commercials of commercial voiceover accounts, animation, which started in 85 for me. But then in 1993, I got this fluke audition to do a promo over at NBC for a campaign they were starting called Must See TV.
Oh,
and so I went over and auditioned for this thing. They liked what I did and they put it on the air that night. And it was the first Must See TV promo. And it was they were launching the John Larroquette show in August, late August of 1993 for the 93 fall season premiere stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but they liked what I did. They started bringing me back in every day for like 2 weeks after that. And within like a month or two, they were giving me all the Tuesday night lineup stuff for their must-see TV comedies. And then after about 3 months or so, by Halloween weekend of 93, they gave me the Tonight Show promos to do also.
Wow.
So here within, you know, a couple of months, I find myself, you know, doing the promos for Seinfeld and Frasier and come 94 or 95, whenever that was, I launched a little show called Friends and Mad About You and all these comedies on NBC at the time. And I was doing the Saturday morning kids block as well, but then also doing the late night stuff I was doing the nightly promos for Jay Leno for The Tonight Show.
Uh-huh.
And then also doing the promos for Saturday Night Live and Conan and all that stuff.
Wow.
So this NBC thing really took off for me. Within a couple of years, I realized, oh my gosh, I mean, this has become my career. Now, at the same time, I was still doing animation as well and a lot of commercial accounts, but it was the NBC thing that ended up just becoming, you know, such a huge, well, you come up with a word because I can't. But it was the biggest thing that had happened to me in my career, really, up to that point, because it ended up lasting for 16 years.
Oh, wow.
So I did all the comedy promos for all the NBC comedies for all those years, starting with Seinfeld and Frasier, Friends, Mad About You, all those, all the way up through 30 Rock and Community and The Office. In 2009.
That's cool.
When they finally let me go. And then I ended up over at ABC after that, doing the same thing, comedy promos for about 5 years. And then they let me go. And then after that, it was over to Fox for a year or two. And then they let me go. So promos, you know, have been really the lion's share of my work.
Yeah.
In all the years that I've been here. So what I was going to say, my point being that because of doing that is why I got ISDN when really very few people had it. But for those of us who were lucky enough and fortunate enough to be doing promo work, we had to be able to connect to the networks like right now.
Right.
And they had to be able to get a hold of us. And if they had a change that needed to be made on a 5-second tag, you know, they'd call me up and say, Townsend, can we get you in 5 minutes to do a quick tag? Sure. You know, so rather than me having to drive back down to Burbank and, you know, go to the studio down there.
So that makes it easier on both sides.
I'm sorry?
It makes it easier on both sides.
Oh, heavens, yeah. Yeah. So that's when I started kind of working from home long before the pandemic
hit. Okay. So you were used to being in your own home studio by that point then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Calling all heroes and fans of the extraordinary. Get ready to morph into a world of fan fiction like never before. I am Cosplayed637, and I'm here to tell you about Power Rangers Universe 19. Picture this. Ultra Rangers defending the universe, Cyber Force Rangers navigating the digital frontier, and the high-flying adventures of the Power Rangers Sky Force. But that's just the beginning. We've got Kamen Rider Wizard conjuring magic, Kamen Rider Drive racing against time, and Kamen Rider Ghost unraveling the supernatural mysteries. And that's not all! Experience the musical journey of Power Rangers Masters of Music and the blood-shivering adventures of Kamen Rider Kiva brought to you by Ty Tiger. Then, brace yourself for the epic tales of the Beetle Troopers by Mark the Red Cornish Ranger. So, why should you tune in? Because Power Rangers Universe 19 is not just a podcast, it's a portal into a multiverse of fan fiction brilliance. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platforms. Search for Power Rangers Universe 19 and join me, CosplayDude637, on an adventure that will ignite your imagination and redefine what it means to be a hero. And remember...
And let the power protect you.
Did you prefer one over the other? Did you prefer doing the voice acting with cartoons? Or did you like doing promos and stuff more?
You know, Jared, I can't say because they both are so unique.
Right.
And are such amazingly wonderful,
yeah,
exciting, blessed ways to make a living. You know, I mean,
yes.
I don't think I would pick one over the other because, you know, they each have their advantages and their disadvantages.
Right.
You know, but I mean, one of the advantages of doing the cartoons and the animation over the years, of course, is that, well, and I think partly it's because having been on a show like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original series in the 80s and 90s,
yeah.
Because being on a popular show like that, I am very fortunate enough to be going out doing Comic-Con appearances now.
Uh-huh.
You know, I wouldn't be doing that if I were just doing a promo or commercial.
Right. That's true.
I have the privilege of being able to do those Comic-Con appearances because of my animation work that I've done. So the animation, you know, I don't want to say advantages. It's got its pluses.
Yeah.
That doing promo doesn't, and conversely, promo has its advantages that don't really trickle over to animation. And right. The same with commercial.
Yeah.
You know, so I really have had these three very distinct legs of my career that I'm just super grateful for.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, they've got their perks, you know. So that's
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to switch this over a little bit and talk about a couple of the characters that, you know, I brought up at the beginning of the show.
Sure.
And one you just talked about was playing Michelangelo. Mm-hmm. My favorite character in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was Michelangelo, always. You know?
All right, dude. Yeah. Totally good answer. Yeah, because if you had said like it was Raphael or like Leonardo or who's my other brother? Oh, yeah, Donatello. Yeah, if you'd said it was one of them, I would have been very disappointed. I'd be hanging up the phone right now. But, dude, all I can say is bodacious. Yeah, you and I are going to have to grab some pizza, head down to the old turtle lair, and nosh on a little anchovy and hot fudge pizza. Whoa, cowabunga!
You just made my night, man.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that'll be $20.
So, tell me about auditioning for that. What was it like?
Well, not unlike any other show that I've auditioned for. So that process that I was describing earlier about yes. auditioning for Inspector Gadget was exactly the same for Ninja Turtles. Now, I will say that I can't say that we had a leg up, but Rob and I were both working on a show called Fraggle Rock, which was which was a Muppet show, a Jim Henson Muppet show originally. But but NBC wanted to do an animated version of it, so they worked out a deal with the Henson people, and we're casting people to do voice matches for the characters from the Muppet version of Fraggle Rock. Okay. And I got just really lucky and got the voice of Gobo on that, and Architect and Wrench, and Robbie was he was Boober. And Marjorie the Trash Heap, and a boatload of other characters. So he and I were both working on Fraggle Rock at the time, and our voice director was a guy named Stu Rosen. And Stu came into one of our Fraggle Rock recording sessions one morning, and he says, "You guys aren't going to believe what I'm going to be casting and directing next. Look at this." And he opens his briefcase and pulls out a comic book of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I mean, we all looked at it, and I looked at it, and I'd never heard of it before. So I'm thinking, yeah, well, have fun, you know, good luck with that. It's just the title of it to me, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. You got to understand that this is back in 1980. It had to be 1986.
Yeah.
And so, this is back in the days when, you know, the cartoons were shows like, you know, My Little Pony and Strawberry Shortcake and Powerpuff Girls, you know, and shows like that.
Yeah.
So Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was a pretty distinct departure from what we were used to. And and maybe it's just because I don't have much of a sense of imagination, but it didn't seem like something that was going to be a huge hit to me. And but Stu said, "But I'll bring you guys in to audition, and you know, we'll see what happens." So we at least knew the casting director, and I think because he was already working with us on Fraggle Rock, he might have been predisposed to want to continue working with us. I don't know.
Okay.
But all I know is that's how I knew Stu. And so he brought me in to audition for Ninja Turtles. Uh-huh. And just like with all the other shows that I've auditioned for, they give you, you know, a piece of paper with your picture on there. Now I will say that all of us who are doing the voices of the four turtles on that original series, we all auditioned for all four turtles.
Oh.
And yeah. And so they gave me, along with the rest of us, the pictures of all four turtles and their descriptions and their sample lines for the audition. And so I looked through these things, and so I read for all four, and ended up booking the series. I got a call from my agent. They said, "Hey, good news, you booked that weird one, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles." And I said, "Oh, cool, that's for Stu. Great." You know, when I said, "Do you know what part?" And my agent said, "Well, I'm not sure. I think it's either Michelangelo or Leonardo, but they'll tell you at the first session."
Right.
So So I show up at the first session, and there's Rob, and he was Raphael. There's Barry, and he's Donatello. And there's a buddy of mine, Cam Clark, who they weren't sure whether he was going to be Leonardo or Michelangelo. And same with me. They weren't sure whether I was going to be Leonardo or Michelangelo. But they knew it was going to be one of us two, and right. and that was it. So Stu says, as we're getting ready to record the first pass, the first take of our first episode, he says to me, "Tony, why don't you do Michelangelo first? Cam, you do Leonardo first, and then we'll do a take two after break, and we'll have you guys switch." He said, "Great, okay." You know, so we did that and got through our first pass and then took a break, came back from break. And so I'm expecting to read Leonardo's role now on this second pass. And Stu says, no, Tony, just you keep Michelangelo for now. We'll worry about switching later.
Yeah.
And Cam's like, "So do you want me to do Leonardo again?" And Stu said, "Yeah." So we just kept our parts for that first recording session, and which I thought was a little odd because I don't know how you're going to worry about it later.
Right. Yeah.
Recording it now, you know, unless you bring us back in, you know, just the two of us to re-record the opposite characters.
Yeah.
So, but that never happened. Huh. And so this was the first episode of that first 5-part miniseries that we did, which was that was the pilot.
Yeah.
For the show. And so I just ended up being Michelangelo. It was almost like with the flip of a coin, you know, rather than Leonardo. And same with Cam. And I mean, he's pissed about that to this day. I know he's very grateful just to have been on the series altogether.
Yeah.
As we all are. But but I think, you know, he there isn't a panel that we do that he doesn't, you know, make a point of saying Leonardo didn't have much of a sense of humor and didn't get to do goofy stuff. And he didn't have a great catchphrase. You know, "We've got to think of something fast," you know, whereas, you know, I was the lucky one that got to say cowabunga a billion times.
Exactly. So, complete polar opposites when it comes to characters.
Right. Right. So that's how the audition. I mean, the audition was just like every other show I've auditioned for.
Right. So another character that I want to talk about. And in fact, whenever I walked up to you at Northwest Arkansas Comic Con, the first thing I said to you was, "You're my favorite character on Adventures in Odyssey." And so I want to talk about that for a little bit.
Of course.
I grew up with this. There was a lady that went to my parents' church that was a radio disc jockey, and she actually they had tapes that, like, they weren't playing on the radio anymore, and so they were going to throw them away or something. I don't know what they were going to do with them. Well, I ended up with the tapes from the radio station of Adventures in Odyssey, and it was the radio ones. You have the beeps in there that goes through for the commercials, all that stuff. And that's what
were they like reel to reel tapes?
They were cassette tapes is what they were.
Oh, they were cassettes. Okay.
They were cassettes. Yeah. Wow. But they had like the beeps in there, you know, that was like the timing for the commercials when it was played on the radio and everything.
Right. And but are you saying that the radio stations, when the radio stations aired Odyssey, that they ran it off of cassettes?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. Really?
Yeah. This was crazy. The 90s.
It makes sense because in the 90s, pretty much reel to reel was, you know, a done deal. But wow, I had no idea that the radio stations were airing those off of cassettes back then in the 80s and 90s. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And on one side, it had a sticker and it had Wit and Connie. And on the other side, it had Eugene and Chris, actually, on the other side. So, and I remember when I actually got my first like box set of Adventures in Odyssey, because I listened to those for years. Like, I had those episodes down pat. I knew everything about them. I had the Castles and Cauldrons episode, you know, and all these other ones. They were really good. There was one where Tom Riley, there was somebody who was poisoning his farm with runoff, you know. I mean, things like that have happened you know, multiple times with Tom. So later on, I bought my first cassette series, and it was Darkness Before Dawn.
Okay.
And I believe that that's where I was introduced to your character, Jason Whitaker. Yeah. And one of the coolest characters ever, you know, I mean, he had the whole, you know, government spy type character going on and everything with the NSA agent. And man, that was probably one of the coolest things. I got into that so much. Adventures and Odyssey's still a part of my life, actually.
Oh, that's cool, dude.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being a fan and a listener for so long. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love meeting, you know, fans who have been listeners from the beginning.
Right.
You know, the fact that the show's been around, you know, first of all, it's a radio drama, so it's not, not a cartoon series. There's no picture, you know, and that's one of the things that I just love about radio drama is it calls upon the listener to use their imagination and fill in the gaps in their mind, you know, so Jason or Whit or Connie or any of them could look completely different. You know, you'd ask 10 different people if they hadn't seen a, you know, a stylized drawing from Focus of these characters. But, you know, what do you think Whit looks like? Or what do you think, you know, Chris looks like?
Yeah.
And, or Eugene. And they'd give you 10 different answers. And it's what I love about radio drama.
You
really have to tap into using your imagination. And it's a more exciting medium than pretty much anything with pictures.
I agree.
Only because it requires you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what I've loved about it. But cool. So you were a fan of a couple of those early episodes that Jason was in?
Yes. And that actually led me into The Last Chance Detectives, which I know your character was in the first season of that. When it came to, there was a group moving into town, and I know that your character, I guess, were you introducing that series, I'm guessing? And they used Jason Whitaker as a way to kind of bring people over to listen to the other series, I guess, right?
Well, yes, I'm imagining that was the whole point of that.
Yeah.
Last Chance Detectives was also video as well. They had a whole video thing that I was not on. Just as Adventures in Odyssey had maybe a season or two. It was before my time when they did some videos.
Yes.
But my character, Jason, was not in those.
Right.
So the only thing that I've done for them is just the radio drama.
I got you.
But I remember doing those several episodes of Last Chance Detectives.
Yes. Sure. So I know that the reason why the Jason character was kind of brought in was around the time of when the guy who played Mr. Whitaker had passed away, correct?
Mm-hmm. His name was Hal Smith.
Hal Smith. And he was Otis on Andy Griffin, and that always blows me away when I think about that.
Yeah, he was Otis the town drunk on the Andy Griffith Show. Yeah,
completely different character.
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah. But Hal was an amazing guy and an amazing character himself.
Yes,
too. But yes, he passed away. So so go ahead.
So what they did is they kind of split the role of Whit up into two people, and you had Jack Allen and you had Jason Whitaker, and Jason was the more adventurous side. You know, he was the one that worked on the imagination station and did those things. And then, you know, the caring side of Whit was more, it went with the Jack Allen character. And I love how they were able to, you know, kind of fill that void. You know, I mean, it's not going to be completely filled because nobody can, you know, replace the character Whit, but being able to do that, you know, and bring in characters, introduce new ones, and have them take part in that role, I thought that was a really great way to continue the show.
Well, I did too. And I think at the time, Focus just felt like there was no way they were going to be able to cast another actor
right
to try and fill Hal Smith's shoes. Yeah. So that's why they created those two new characters. One, I should explain for the listeners here that so the role of Jack Allen, played by Alan Young from the Mr. Ed show, mm-hmm. He was Wilbur on Mr. Ed. That character is an older contemporary of Wits.
Yes,
they were school chums when they were young. Mm-hmm. And then the character of Jason was Wits' son. So more was younger, more impulsive, you know,
yeah.
More adventuresome, that kind of thing. So yes, you're right. They sort of split the personality of Wit in a couple of different ways and yeah. gave some of those character traits to his son Jason and a couple of the more mature grown-up characteristics, if you will, you know, spiritually mature characteristics to Jack Allen.
Yeah.
And so that's the way it was going to be. And so that's when I started on the show in 1994. Mm-hmm. And as well as did Alan Young. And so we started working together, and I don't know how long it was after, you know, maybe it was 6 months later, maybe it was a year later. I honestly don't remember, but at some point after our characters had already begun to establish themselves.
Yeah.
Somebody called Focus on the Family's headquarters in Colorado Springs from Seattle saying that, I just want you to know there's a guy on the radio up here who sounds just like Wit. I mean, exactly. Spitting yep. image of Wit.
Right.
And so they said, really? Well, if you can get us, you know, his information or something, we'd like to talk to him. So they did. And I guess they had a phone meetup, and to hear the guys at Focus tell it, they got goosebumps when they heard this guy's voice on the other end of the line.
Right.
They said, Oh my goodness. It is Wit. It is Hal Smith.
Right.
Doing Wit. And so they brought him down to Burbank and auditioned him at the studio where we record. So I should just interject here real quick. Even though Focus on the Family is in Colorado Springs and their production studios are there, and that's where the show is actually produced.
Yes.
It's actually recorded. The actors, the voice actors, actually record here in L.A.
Oh, okay.
Actually in a studio over in North Hollywood.
Okay.
So we record here, and then they take – so they come in a couple of times a year from the Springs to record us here, and then they take those files back to Colorado Springs and actually produce the show there.
Gotcha.
And that's where they, you know, marry it with all the music that's done and do all the Foley and sound effects and all that stuff. So anyway they brought this guy, his name is Paul Herlinger, down mm-hmm. from Seattle to audition him down here, and they fell in love with him. They fell in love with his, not only his voice, but just him as a person. I mean, he was just such a great guy, and he became Wit, and largely people kind of didn't know the difference between his Wit and Hal Smith's Wit. They were that close.
Right.
So Paul, voiced Wit for quite a few years. And then unfortunately he too passed away.
Yeah.
And then that's when they cast Andre Stoika uh-huh. as Wit, who is the current Wit.
Right.
And brilliant at it also. So, So that's where our characters came from originally.
They all do have done a great job with those parts. And you were talking about how nobody could tell the difference between those two. There was one thing that I was able to find, and this was the only thing, and it was their laugh was different.
Oh, between Hal's Wit and
yes.
and Paul's Wit?
Yes.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, their laugh was different.
How about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the only way I'd be like, oh, this is an older episode. You know, if I was listening on the radio or something like that, and it would be when Wit would laugh, I could tell the difference in that. Maybe that says how much I listened to it a little bit too much or something. I don't know. But
yeah, no, but you got a sharp ear. And, but you know, it's That's one thing that I just love about you guys and about fans of just all these genres of work that we do and right. stuff, is when somebody is so into something, it's really curious to me. It's really interesting to find out what is it that you love about this show or about yeah. this radio drama or about yeah. this cartoon or about, you know, what is it? What is it? How, first of all, how did you discover it? How did you discover that you loved it?
Yeah.
And why, you know, and, but very often, because I wasn't like this when I was a kid, very often it's because, you know, people just, they latched onto a cartoon series that they just loved the voices and then found out that these voices were done by voice actors. And then yeah. they would be listed in the credits at the end of the show. Right. And then they'd start mixing and matching names and going, oh, wait a second, that's Frank Welker. Wait, I saw his name in the credits of another show. And then they'd start, you know, doing some investigation like that. And
yeah,
and then that's how they become fans.
Yeah.
So, you know, but everybody's got something unique and peculiar to them that sort of sets them apart. It's like you saying, yeah, I could always sort of zero in on Witt's laugh and be able to tell the difference between the two actors because yeah. of the laugh.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic, man. That's great.
Hal's was a bit of a raspier laugh, a little huskier laugh to him.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and uh-huh. so I can always tell that, but man, I got to tell you, I'm geeking out over here at the moment with this because like I said, I grew up with this. I grew up in a Christian household. My dad's pastor of a church. We didn't have TV growing up. And so right. this was my entertainment. A lot of times was listening to Adventures in Odyssey or reading comic books. Unless I was at my grandma's house, then I was watching Ninja Turtles.
Right. There you go. Cause grandma would let you get away with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Grandma lets you get away with anything. So,
right, right, right. Well, that's great, man.
Yeah. Well, man, I have really enjoyed talking to you tonight. I've got just a couple more things I wanted to ask you before I get you off of here.
Sure thing.
So what would be the best advice that you would give somebody who maybe wants to get into a career like this?
Oh, boy. Okay, well, yeah. Let me see. One word. Don't.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because I'm thinking I don't know, Jared.
You know, the business is so different now than it used to be. You know, right. years ago, I would have said, first of all, you know, if it's animation or character stuff you want to do, you have to be here in L.A.,
yeah.
Which is still largely true, I think. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible to get animation work living in another market, you know. So right. we certainly have the technology to be able to connect, you know, studios.
Yes.
But it's for animation and going back to what we were saying earlier about them, because they are going back to wanting people in the studio together,
yes.
Actors in the studio together again. And so I think that if you were really serious about wanting to get into animation, you kind of have to be here in LA. But you know, there's exceptions to every rule. So who knows? I would say this business is really ultra competitive, mm-hmm. and which is not to say that newcomers, you know, can't come in and break in. They do all the time. I mean, all of us were newcomers at one point. All of us started someplace,
right.
you know, and it's still true. It's just that when you start now, the barrier to entry is so much greater
right.
than it was back when I came to town 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Just because voiceover is a thing now. It
yes.
didn't used to be.
Right.
You know, the internet is a thing now when it didn't even exist when I moved here. And, you know, because of the internet and because of social media and because those two things alone and because early Comic-Cons, this whole voiceover industry has now become like a golden ring for people. It's
yeah.
it's become a goal for people. Whereas, you know, when I came to town, again, like I was saying, I knew I could probably do a little voiceover work because I had done so much back in Cleveland.
Right.
That was pretty much all announcing, though. That was doing commercials, you know, not doing characters. So, and I was only thinking of it as an adjunct. You know, back in those days, I don't think there were very many people that set out to want to be a voice actor. Now, to be sure, there were people like Nancy Cartwright and Corey Burton and, you know, folks like that who absolutely knew that that's what they wanted to do. And that's why they moved here, mm-hmm. you know, was to be a voice actor.
Yeah.
And primarily, you know, doing characters. But for me, you know, and most people coming to LA, you didn't come here to do commercials. You didn't come here to do voiceovers. You came here to be an actor.
Right.
And move in film and TV. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I kind of, as I was, you know, sharing earlier, kind of fell into it.
Right.
Without really thinking much about it. Well, now people want to do it for a living. And with technology being what it is, you know, with a laptop and a fairly decent USB mic and a pair of headphones and a fast internet connection, you know, you can be auditioning for stuff on any number of these voiceover audition websites like yep. Voice123 and such. And, you know, unfortunately, most of them are pay to play, which means you got to pay a fee to just be able to audition for these things. It's a whole another line of work now for, you
right.
know, that's cropped up in the last 10 years.
Yep.
But I would say, you know, just know that the odds are stacked against you right off the bat. Now, that will discourage a lot of people, maybe discourage most people.
Yeah.
But for those people that aren't discouraged by that and you just say, I don't care. I want to give it a shot because I think I've got it in me. If you can't see yourself doing anything else on this planet to make a living except doing voiceovers, then I say, give it a shot, go for it. There's a great resource that D. Bradley Baker has. It's a website called iwanttobeavoiceactor.com. So
okay.
if you just go to iwanttobeavoiceactor.com and just, you know, peruse that, thumb through, you know, all the info that D's got up on that website, it's a real compendium of a really useful information. And so that's a great place to start. I would say, you know, all voice acting is acting. So mm-hmm. don't forget that. It's not just about being having a good voice, you know, or something. I mean, it is acting. And I don't care whether it's animation or commercials or promo or audiobooks or doing a phone tree, you know,
yeah.
press one. For you know,
yeah,
that could, it's all acting. It all is acting. So if you're not an actor, that's okay. But take some acting lessons. Get involved gotcha. In theater.
Yeah.
Get involved in your school productions. Get involved in community theater. Whatever. But start taking some acting classes. Start taking some improv classes. Even if you don't want to be an actor in front of the camera or on stage, if you want to be a voice actor, you got to be an actor. So study there. Take workshops. If you happen to be in a market that has some decent voiceover workshops or character workshops or that kind of thing, voiceover workout groups,
yeah.
Some of the larger markets, certainly like LA, New York, Chicago, Atlanta, they've got these sorts of things.
Yeah.
You know, and then just go for it, you know, put your head down and don't give up. If it really is something that you feel like you just have to do, or at least have to get out of your system.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
All right, man. Is there anything coming up that maybe you want to talk about?
No, you know, I hate to say, but I'm sort of largely retired.
Okay.
My last regular gig that I had was voicing the daily promos for Live with Kelly and Ryan, okay. which I was doing back when it was Live with Regis and Kelly. So I did that gig for about 17 years. And then as happens to, you know, to all our gigs, you know, we end up getting replaced for one reason or another. And so I got replaced about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. And after that, I realized, boy, you know what? I've been going full steam for 40 years, for over 40 years in my voiceover stuff.
Right.
And I'm kind of tired. And not that I don't want to keep working. I would love to keep working. But I find that, you know, there is a bit of ageism even in voiceover, which you wouldn't think there would be.
No.
Because I don't think I sound like I'm what one would imagine a 70-year-old sounding like, although I'm not 70 yet. I'll be 70 in May. But I'm still, you know, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, so go figure.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And I still got all the energy and all the stuff that I feel like I've always had. And
definitely.
So it's, I don't think it's because I'm not viable or relevant anymore, but it's because there's a whole new raft of kids coming into town, just like there was 40 years ago when I came into town.
Yeah.
And it's just it's the nature of the beast. It's the circle of life. It's true in any career that you get into, is you will eventually sort of age yourself out of it a little bit. So I've slowed down in that sense a lot, but I am doing, so really these Comic-Cons now have become my career. They've become my job.
Right.
And I just love it. I love going out with these, because most of the cons that I do are with the other three Ninja Turtle guys, with Rob Paulson, Cam Clark, and Barry Gordon. So the four of us, and then often with Renee Jacobs also, who is the voice of April, the four of us or the five of us will go out together and do these cons together. And because this is the 40th anniversary of the Ninja Turtle comic book, it's kind of a big year for us. We're doing a lot of shows. And then I imagine in 2027, in 3 years, it'll be our 40th anniversary too. So those are keeping me very busy. Other than that, spending time with my little Remy Lou, my 2-year-old granddaughter, and loving every minute of it.
Awesome, man.
And I miss my other grandkids. I got 7 grandkids all together, but they're all out of town. So
yeah,
it makes it difficult to, you know, just drive over and have dinner with them. But but no complaints. Very grateful for all that that I've got going on and that I've had in my life. Love my kids, my grandkids, and yeah, all happy right. boy.
Well, man, it has been amazing talking to you tonight. I've really enjoyed this. And maybe we'll get you back on here again at some point.
All right. It'd be great. Yeah. Thanks, Jared.
All right.
All right. Well, dude, all I can say is turtle power. Whoa.
Generic audio commercial, Zio to Hero, take 43. Hey, listener, it looks like you're having fun over here listening to insert generic name here. If you like what you're listening over here, come on over to the Zio to Hero podcast, where you can join Billy and myself, the Balkan Skull of podcasting. If you want to listen to Ranger Powers and you want to go into and talk about anime, Gundam, what did I make up wrong?
You're supposed to say Zio to Hero is the best, and Billy and Jim as Balkan Skull of podcasting is funnier than any other show out there, and you didn't say Power Rangers right. Get out of here, do it again.
Dang it. Fine. Generic audio commercial, Zio to Hero, take number 44. Hey, listener, it looks like you're having fun over here listening to insert generic name here.
God, come on!
Wrestling fans, join us for the Diamond State Flawless TV recordings live in front of a studio audience. Every 2 weeks, join us in the Diamond Dome for the best live independent wrestling. Diamond State Wrestling is on the road to crowning the second annual King and Queen of Diamonds. You never know what's going to happen or what you'll see in Diamond State Wrestling. The show is called Flawless. It's every other Sunday at the Diamond Dome in Springdale, Arkansas, in the Next Level Soccer Center. Doors open at 3 o'clock with bell time at 4. Tickets start at $10 for general admission and $5 for children. For more information, check out DiamondStateWrestling.com.
All right, everybody. I hope that you enjoyed that episode with Townsend Coleman. He was a great guest, and I love how he was on here doing all these different voices and things like that. That really made my day. And he was a wonderful person to have on. And I just want to say thank you to him for being on the show, taking time out of his schedule to be on there and talk with me. It was really cool. And I look forward to maybe getting him back on again in the future. So next week's episode is actually going to be the one that I told you last week is going to happen. I was supposed to record with Cullen Bunn, and he actually got sick, so we had to reschedule. And hopefully everything works out good, and I will be recording with him here really soon. He is the writer behind Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. He's done all kinds of cool stuff. He's a horror writer, and he's wrote for Marvel and DC and Image and Dark Horse and all kinds of stuff. He has a movie that he's credited for being the writer of on Hulu, even, called The Empty Man. So, yeah, look up his stuff, and that should be who I am having on next. And while you're waiting for another episode of iGadapt to drop, why don't you check out my podcast networks, the OIW Podcast Network, the Zio to Hero Podcast Network, and the Avenue Podcast Network. They all have great stuff on there, and you're bound to find something cool to listen to while you're waiting on my show to come back for with another episode. So make sure you go out there and hit them up and show them some love. So as you know, I have merch out. If you'd like a shirt or a tumbler, or I'm even going to have koozies here soon, or some stickers, just hit me up and let me know what you would like. Tell me your size and where to ship it, and we'll work everything out. But yeah, my wife makes all that stuff. She's pretty awesome. She makes all of the stuff that I design, or one of my friends designed for me and stuff, and makes it into really cool stickers and hats and all kinds of things. She brings my ideas to life, and I don't know what I'd do without her. So if you guys could go out there and show her some love too. It's Cups and Teas by Stacia is the name of her business. And she makes great stuff. Great quality stuff. So yeah, look her up. If you like the way my ending theme song sounds when I say I love you guys at the end of the show, that's D-Cure. He makes all kinds of really cool music, and he's always creating new stuff. So if you like the way that sounds, make sure that you go out there and follow him. I will have a link to his website in my show notes. So, Original Geek just did their first release of the Eighth Day comic. It is now out. You can get copies of that. They did the release, as I'm recording this, at Kapow Comics today. It was a pretty cool turnout from what I saw. They had a lot of people come out and see them. We'll be posting stuff about that throughout the week. But also, Vengeance Issue 3 is now available for pre-order. Make sure that you get your third issue of this, because this will be the conclusion of the Dawning arc for Vengeance. Go to the website, originalgeek.com, and get you pre-ordered for that, or get some of the other stuff. They've got pretty cool merch on there as well, and I think they got some shirts on sale. So yeah, I'll have a link to all of their places in my show notes as well. We'll be doing some live events here really soon. I believe our next one that Nick will be doing is at Heroes and Wizards Comic Books and More in Webb City, Missouri. He'll be doing a release there as well for the Eighth Day comic. So if you want to go out there and say hi to him, you can do that. And then we will both be in Paris, Texas after that at PTX Con. So if you're in that area on April 13th, make sure that you come out and say hi to us. It's going to be really cool. This is going to be my first time being a guest at a con. So, yeah, come say hi. Maybe get some merch. I'll have plenty of it there. Also, I have a branch off of If You Give a Dad a Podcast now called If You Give a Dad a YouTube channel. And there's another one coming as well called If You Give a Dad a Cosplay. So the YouTube channel is out now. So make sure that you go and follow Ty on there and keep up with the videos. He has two of them out so far. And Willie will be doing the If You Give a Dad a Cosplay here really soon. I'll be keeping you guys up to date on that. And there'll be more coming with that here really soon. I'm very excited about the future of If You Give a Dad brand. And we'll be doing more stories even, because, you know, we've done the If You Give a Dad a Dragon Dagger and If You Give a Dad a Autobot. So we've got more stuff coming. Great stuff. I'm excited about all of it. So make sure that you stay tuned. So you hear me talking about social media. Make sure that you go out there and follow me on all of it. I am pretty much everywhere. Just go and search If You Give a Dad a Podcast, and you can find me on there that way. Or you can go to Google. I should be the first 10 to 15 results on there as well. If you want to send me an email, send it to giveadadapodcast@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you guys. Or if you guys want to order your merch that way, you can do that as well. But I do love hearing from you guys. I love getting feedback. So with saying that, I have a favor that I need you to do for me. As you're listening to this, make sure that you go out and rate and review this episode. Tell me what you think of it. Whether you liked it or whether you didn't, let me know what you think of it. Because the more people that do that, the more likely I am to be recommended to other people as well. And I would love to see this podcast grow even more. I've seen it grow a lot in the last 2 years. Last week was my two-year anniversary episode that I did with Billy and Jim from the Zio to Hero podcast, which was great chaos. You guys should go listen to that. It was a lot of fun to do that episode with them and doing the ending part with them. We kind of collaborated and made something funny for the ending of that episode. So make sure that you go back and listen to that one as well. But yeah, I've been doing this for 2 years, and I love how much this show has grown, and I would love to see it grow even more. Also, make sure that you like, share, and subscribe to this. Hit the notification bell wherever it is that you're listening. That way you are notified when a new episode of iGadap drops. So, we've come to the end of another episode of If You Give a Dad a Podcast. And it is time for Billy's favorite part of the episode. And that is Dad Joke of the Week. I hate it when people say age is only a number. Age is clearly a word.
Jared, you stay over there. You stay over there. Yeah, you get back. You get back right now.
I'm done
get
with
back.
This guy.
Over there.
I'm bad.
No,
this
bad.
Let me out.
I'm getting the spray bottle. I'm getting the spray bottle.
I'm going to swing.
Spray bottle.
I'm going to put them on wall. Walls of Jared.
All right. I love you guys. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will see you next time. Bye.
On. He calls us beautiful people, then tells us who we have on. The best part of my day, though we're blocked out in my pods. Tell my friends all about it so that they follow along. And the host is kinda nerdy, but guess what I am as well. I don't feel so alone, and I began walking out of my shell. Heard a story, I need a connection I haven't felt. I'll be looking for the next one, tell then farewell.
It's the podcast for me. Have it on, better go see. Closely download and tune in remotely. It's the podcast for me. Have it on, better go see and listen closely. Download and tune in remotely.
This podcast is part of the OIW Podcasting Network.